Here it is. There it is. Grant West. What's up, dude?
Hello. How are you, Steve? Hello.
Where are you right now? Where do you live?
I am in Los Angeles.
Dude, you're in LA.
Yeah, I probably would have offered to do it in person, but I didn't read the email that you did. I was talking to the cool man. Yeah, I'm down. Whatever.
That's fine, man. I mean, it is what it is. We may, you know what? I tell you what, if it goes well, we'll do another one and we'll do that one in person. More than happy to have you over, bud. We've never met before. I usually give some context to the conversation if we're old friends catching up or something like that. This could not be any less than that because you and I have never met. I didn't even know. I had to like check your major and write it down so I don't forget and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what's going on. People know that that's the nature of this show. But I'm excited to talk to you, dude. Film, recent grad in the grand scheme of things. Let's talk about it from the beginning. I usually start with where are you from?
Okay, so I'm from Hickory, North Carolina. I moved around a lot, but I ended up there in fifth grade. And then I stayed there. And then every summer I'd be in my grandma in Philly. So I kind of bounced back and forth.
Did you live in Philly before you moved to Hickory?
We lived in Pennsylvania for a bit. Gettysburg, yeah.
Okay.
Kind of consistent thing that I was spending most of the year there.
Do you still go back? Or do you feel any roots in Pennsylvania at all?
I mean, I'm an Eagles fan, and I
there
still
go
grandma for sure. And I know where to get a good cheesesteak, and I've been to all the monuments in the art museum like 12 times. Like for a while there, it was kind of southerner in the north, northern in the south type situation.
Right.
But then, you know, as I got older, you know, kept saying y'all, I'm basically from there now.
Right. So you feel like a little Yankee blood, but mostly it's more nostalgic for you and you really connect more with your roots in the South.
Yeah, that's where I spent most of the time growing up. You know, we settled there when I was a kid and then, you know, middle school, high school, college was all there. So
did you go right from high school to college, like directly?
Yeah.
When did you decide that you were going to go to school for something like film?
Late into high school, probably my junior, senior year, I guess. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. My grades were good. So I was like, we can probably pick, you know, a thing. We can do a thing.
Right.
If we have to, something like computer science or something. But I remember the most fun I had growing up was just making videos with my friends. Like if we had a project that was like open, we're going to do like a video or a little film about it and we're going to be silly and like have a good time. And then I started working for volunteering, but see, then ended up actually getting paid for a local camp. And I was doing their like camp montage every week, which was super fun. So I was like, all right, this makes me happy. I get to make other people happy. That's usually the best part. And then let's do that. And so I chose to go to UNCSA. I wanted to be a producer at first, but then found design after the first year.
Help me with the math here. Were you born in like 98, 99?
Yeah, 98, late 98.
Late 98. So when you're like in fifth grade, which is when you start doing like fun, cool things with your friends for real. Before that, you're kind of mostly doing stuff at home, I find. But around like fourth or fifth grade is when you really start doing stuff with your friends in the middle school. You're already in a world where people are starting to have like reasonable cameras on their phones. Like people are just having cameras in their pockets from about as early as you can remember hanging out with your buddies, right? But you guys probably didn't have phones.
So my first smartphone, I guess, was the iPhone 4.
Okay. You got one before me. My first one was the 5.
Yeah. I think I had Instagram in sixth or seventh grade was when I first got Instagram was released. That was the only thing. So I remember that. So at that point, we had cameras. The camp I worked at provided a DSLR, though the programs we used were definitely scuffed. Like, I'm pretty sure first editing software I liked to use was like torrented Sony Vegas.
Yeah.
All of our camp content was made on was Sony Vegas.
So how old are you when you're making that stuff? The earliest?
15, 16, 17.
Got it. What do your folks do?
My mom is a project manager.
For what?
Manager at CommScope, which is like telecom lines, I guess.
Okay.
My stepdad is a financial aid advisor at a community college. So
financial aid advisor, man, those people are fucking important.
Yeah, he definitely takes a lot of licks. He deals with a lot of people, helps them get, you know, scholarships and grants and things like that. Yeah, he's a good
Yeah, it is one of the more pivotal roles and overlooked kind of bureaucratic people who work at a desk at a college places, because you can either, it's so easy to just kind of take a paycheck at a job like that, because you'd be like, hey man, I tried, but look, here's the bill. I don't know what to tell you. But if you're really good at it, man, you can really change a kid's life and make it like possible for them to go and do something that was otherwise like totally impossible. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How long has your stepdad been your stepdad?
Since, well, I moved to Hickory in fifth grade because we were moving in with him. So, that's how that math works.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they weren't married.
Does dad stay in Pennsylvania?
He lives in Maryland now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Close with him?
Not really.
Okay.
Maybe just had a car once a year or something like that.
Got it. Stepdad is dad.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I don't think like that relationship is like my dad, because there was a big period after my dad got kicked out before we got my stepdad. So, and then it was just me and my mom. And I just kind of was like, you know, the stereotypical like man of the house, but you're like him.
Sure.
So Mark was my stepdad, you know. He was definitely a good like male role model, but like he never became my dad, if that makes sense. Like we just didn't have him.
Yeah, I get that. No, my relationship with my stepdad is the same way, actually. Never called him dad. It was always Richard, you know? You never quite got... It's not like you don't care about him. It's not like they're not important, but just never quite... It's a different thing. It's hard to explain.
On Christmas, makes me feel good.
But like, yes.
Maybe a little time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are your thoughts when you're younger about... I mean, you're having fun and stuff like that. Do you have notions before the filmmaking thing kind of sets in on like the future? Let me ask that in a better way. I feel like a lot of kids, while they're kids, are just worried about kid shit pretty much all the time. There's someone who's like, you know, very in the moment. And I think all kids are like that to a degree, but I know a lot of other kids, especially when I was growing up, some of my friends who I did not relate to very well, they already had plans about like the future from young, you know. They're like in eighth, ninth grade, and they're like, I'm going to go to this college. I want to do this for a living. I want to move to this city. They had all these like down the road plans. And I'm like, we have a dance on Fridays. Anybody fucking with that? Cause that's like, I'm curious, like, yeah. Where are you on that scale? Like, were you worried about Friday, or were you worried about like 10 years?
Planning out super far in advance from eighth or ninth grade seemed a little bit far-fetched. Like, definitely not then. I mean, I didn't even know about UNCSA until my junior year. And right. They lived an hour from me. Like, I did not know they existed until my mom found them on Google, and they were like an hour away. And it was not
sure.
Like, no offense, I love the school. Trust me.
No.
I'm a rep it till the day I die. But like, I didn't know it was there.
Sure.
I didn't even know that I want to do film probably until my junior year, where I was like, okay, I can like really commit to this. The only thing that I think was there, which is definitely more living in the moment, was just like the passion to do it. Like, I was always a person who was like, okay, if it's me and there's only like 60 hours of work between me and whatever the next like milestone is, like we can make that happen. Like, we'll put in the hours. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, you know, find a way, I guess. But that being said, I didn't even know about design until my first year at UNCSA.
Right.
Know, it was mostly my work ethic and my interests that just kind of structured where I'm going. I definitely didn't have like, okay, you know, I'm going to go to App State, which are you? You said you were from North Carolina or from LA?
No, I lived there for a long time, but I'm from Texas originally.
Okay, I got you. But you know about App State.
I do know about App State.
So it's not like I was like, I'm going to go to App State and then, you know, find a nice girl and like have a kid at 23. I was like, that's not the plan.
It was not sure.
It was going to be the plan.
How early did you know that?
Probably as early as I could think it was super unwise. Probably like 15, 13, 14. Because the camp I worked at was a Bible camp. And I got to understand backwards, right? Okay. So like some kids are like, we're not having sexual relations before marriage. It's a big part of their belief system.
Of course.
So that creates a situation where, it's neither here nor there, but kids get married really early, like at 18 or something, and like, or 19 or 20, and like settle down. And I just knew, I was like, I want to like do some things with my life and like see what's out there and like explore the world. I know it's there. I play video games. I know the map is big. Like, let's go.
I appreciate the analogy.
Like a condescension at all. I just knew that that wasn't my plan. And that was the only long-term plans that people seemed to have at that time.
I appreciate that you're careful with the way you speak and saying that you don't mean anybody any harm. It's very kind of you. I think that it is interesting that you say that, because a lot of children of divorce or separation, whatever your situation ends up being, a lot of children of diverse home structure often go seeking that solidarity and structure early on in their lives. A lot of times they get married themselves really young, or they find themselves gravitating towards significant others whose parents are still together because it kind of gives them a family to kind of latch onto. But it sounds like you had almost an inspiration from the independence of your mom in that moment of like, take care of yourself and go out and do cool shit.
Definitely. She's very inspired, you know.
Yeah.
She'll put in the work. Like, she definitely taught me how to work and, you know, taught me how to be really great. So she definitely, you know, put that dog in me. I guess
it's interesting that you know, I appreciate it. You speak so glowingly of your mom, but you also sounded a little bit, with all due respect, like you're really not sure what exactly she does.
What she does now?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's because it's definitely evolved over the years. Like,
okay.
Well, mostly what she does is just keep teams coordinated and keep them on track. Like, she's really just shuffling people as a project.
She's a whip cracker.
What do you say?
She's a whip cracker.
Kind of. I put her more like a train conductor. It just seems like in these tech jobs, no one's talking to each other. And they're right. All like, we're hiring one person because none of us know how to talk to each other. And that's the project.
Yes.
So she's just making sure that all these people can actually like get things done and manage themselves.
Legit, dude.
Not good.
No, I can connect to this. I'm talking a little shit, but this is a very real thing. I dated a girl. I'm married now, but I dated a girl a couple years before I was with my wife. And she was this British girl, and she was exactly that. She now, especially now that you remind me that that's what that is. She was a project manager for a tech company, and her whole thing was to come in with all these men and be like, hey, this is a mess. Just, you're going to do this. And I'm not telling you how to do your job, but I'm telling you what you're going to do so that we can turn it in on time. Because this is like out of control.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a cool job. And it takes a very particular kind of person, because I was dating her, so I knew her outside of that job. And especially in the tech world, how old's your mom?
She's been there for a while, mostly since I can't remember, but she's 52 now.
Dude, since back when, like, they were barely allowed to be in the business.
She's definitely a glass ceiling fighter. I mean,
yeah, dude.
Her story reads that way for sure. She's like, I'm getting in here. This is happening.
I respect the shit out of that. Well, it sounds like you have, and is what, let me ask you about stepdad again. What's his name? Was it Mark?
Mark, yeah.
Mark, how long has Mark been doing the financial aid thing?
Oh, no, forever. Like, literally, like, like, a decade. Like, forever. But he's a different style than my mom, though.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't have two of those people, bro, if I'm being honest with you. Oh, two of your mom, can you imagine? I don't know you. I don't know your mom, but two of your mom in one relationship, does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah, I just don't know who would ever be. Well, my mom was home, but like, they would just both be workaholics, and they just and she doesn't even work terribly long hours now. Like, now that she's deeper into her career in a higher position, she kind of can just like chill back, work remote, puppet master type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that they couldn't handle that for sure. Especially,
it's a lot.
There's four kids. So,
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about siblings.
Okay. I like to describe it as a Narnia situation.
Fun.
I'm the eldest brother. Basically, what happened was my mom had two boys, my stepdad had two girls. They both got divorced and then married each other.
You guys Brady Bunched it?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Brady Bunch light, 2/3. I appreciate that.
So I'm the older brother. My stepsister, who I usually just call my sister, is a year older than me.
Yeah.
And then a little brother and a little sister who are four and a half years younger than me, but they're only 3 weeks apart. So they're like literally almost the same age.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. So when I'm putting all this math together in my head. So how much older is the sister?
She's a year older than so she be.
So you're pretty close.
Yeah. Very
what close. What is her thing? What is she into?
She is a medical administrator. She runs like
that. I knew it was going to be some type A shit. I just feeling for this.
Yeah. She's like complete like medical back end. Like she was helping them run like the COVID trials and stuff like that.
100%. And now how old are your younger siblings right now?
They're both 19.
They're both in a, yeah, right. Cause they're in that same ballpark. So what are their vibes?
They're cool. Lena's super quiet. Both my sisters were the more athletic ones than Josh. So they were really into volleyball. So Lena,
what's that like? Is that weird growing up in North Carolina with like sisters who can throw and catch and stuff better than you?
Not too weird. I mean, it kind of just fit into like my vibe. Like in middle school, I definitely was just like a bit of a smarter than you nerd, not like a condescending.
Sure.
I was just like, I know where I excel and I'm going to be sarcastic the rest of the time.
It's okay if you were condescending, man. We won't beat you up too hard. You were in middle school.
That's fair. I mean, I just wasn't like bullying people or like being like, you're dumb. I just knew I was smart. Get down.
Right. Passive aggressive micro confidence.
Yeah, sassy fit.
Yeah, of course. Yes, sir.
Snarky. No, snarky is the right word.
There you go.
And then what was your question? How do they all fit together?
Oh no, just what the vibe was with the younger siblings. I kind of interrupted you.
Yeah, they're definitely great because every time we're stanced in such a way to where I finish high school and Josh begins it. That's my little brother.
Right.
I would do like each phase of life right as he begins. That was really the whole second.
Sounds like you guys all get along.
We did. Yeah, we had sibling dinner over Christmas. It just was part of it. You know, what was the birthday? Yeah, funny. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Your ass was weird if my sisters were more athletic. Not really. Mark's kids were more athletic. Mark was an athlete. We were just, you know, gamer kind of film guys. I played sports until like the end of middle school, I guess. And then my high school didn't run off at all the sports. No. My sport was League of Legends in high school. Like, ironically.
So let's talk about that change then that happened, because you mentioned it before, you had a certain expectation going into school. You know, we've mapped it out kind of so far. It sounds like parents are providing a pretty good example of diligence and commitment and working things out. You clearly are very an articulate person. So that's coming from the parents as well. They're good communicators and stuff like that. Everybody's mostly getting along, pretty good vibe at the house. So it seems like fairly carefree once you land and everything, kind of the water settles enough so that you're like, film school is a good idea. I'm not rushing off to like solve some worldly problem immediately or, attain some lifelong crazy ambition of being like a doctor, some 8-year gig like that. So you're like, film school. You're going to go into film school, you said, with producing in mind. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Basically. What did that mean? You're like 17 years old. What do you know about producing?
Nothing. So
what did you think it meant?
Basically, I was like, the producer like makes things happen and they get paid.
Hell yeah. Whatever.
And I want to get paid big checks. Because for me, it's all about making people happy. Like, I just wanted to be able to bring joy to others. I was like, if I can get 80 of y'all in a room, put some shit on a screen, and it makes everybody have a better day, then like, that's a win. Like, that's giving back to society. That's a victory.
What about directing though? That's really close to that, but you don't want to do that. You want to be a producer.
Yeah. I don't know. Directing felt
too much.
Ineffective, honestly, to come in.
What do you mean?
Like, I definitely have a little bit of like auteur phobia, I suppose. Like, everybody wants to be a director. Everyone wants to be that guy, wants to be a Scorsese. That would put me in a lineup against like 30 other white dudes saying they want to be Tarantino. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to get things done and make stuff happen. I don't care about being an auteur. I don't want to direct. I don't really know how to act. I don't want to tell the actors what to do. So then when I found design after my first year, I was like, this is everything I like and nothing I don't like. This is like, we can build a world, which is a concept I was very familiar with, but a lot of Dungeons and Dragons in high school. So I was like, this is where I can express myself the best to the highest tier.
Yes.
Directing for me would be, I don't know, bizarre, perhaps.
When you play D&D, do you DM? Dungeon Master, for those listening who may not be down on the low?
Totally go. A couple times, yes. Like, I was having, you know, me and my friends rotated. So I've DM'd before. Our bigger campaigns was run by my other friend, but I've ran a bunch.
I only ask because that's kind of like a half acting, half writing, half directing. There's too many halves there, but you understand kind of role. But even if you're not passionate about that either, it seems like that's just not your area.
Well, it's fun to like be a character. It just wasn't like where I wanted to level up to. Like, I never wanted on screen at all, but like, if you guys want to sit around and like pretend to be goblins, like, that sounds like a great time. Plus, it's more like collaborative. A director, at least in my belief system at the time, I felt like not was responsible for everything, but the idea of a director when you enter film school is like, okay, the director does everything, and then there's like 100 other people. I don't know what the fuck they do. But the director does everything.
That's how it felt.
Yeah, I was like, this cannot be true, or the facts, and doesn't really seem super appealing. So I guess
going... Right, it doesn't work that way, really.
Wasn't my angle, you know? I thought I'd get in easier if I angled producing, made a couple spreadsheets.
Yeah. It really is analogous to, like, the presidency. It's a great way to think about a film set. It works a lot like the presidency, because it's all, at the end of the day, first of all, like you said, it's all the credit. Good or bad, it's going to be on that director for making a great movie or destroying it. But truthfully, they spend most of the day with qualified, talented people coming up to them saying, hey, what do you think? There's all these things we made, and we think these work good for these reasons. What do you think? And the director's like, fucking this. Probably, right? We should do that. I mean, based on, you just told me this one, so probably that one, because you know what you're talking about. It's like a general comes up to the president. He's like, we got all these countries, all right? We think we should bomb these ones for these reasons, probably. What do you think? And he's like, fuck. I mean, I just got this job last year. You've been doing this for 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, they get all the blame. But really, it is everybody. It's you. If the set doesn't make any sense, the director might get in trouble for that, but you did it.
Yeah. They might be on the chopping block. Also, the older I get and the more I work in film, this might be a little bit spicy.
Let's go. Break down the walls.
Like, if we're on set already, like, say we're on set, I'm not counting pre-production where some decisions are being made. But if we're on set, like, at that point, the director truly just could talk to the actors, and like, everything else would work without him. Like, there's people that are going to pick the right props. There's people that are going to get there on time. There's people that are going to get crafty. If all his role is really just making sure the accurate emotion comes out of the actors, then everyone around him is effective enough to just only have him give that opinion.
Can I give you a little bonus onto your spicy opinion?
Yes. More spice.
The actors are no different from any other department, bro. If you have the right people in that place too, he don't got to fucking do nothing in that role either. They don't have anything to say to the actors other than to block them. That is like the only thing that, unless you've rehearsed it ahead of time, which not many films get the opportunity to do, and you've done it with camera stand-ins and shit like that, maybe they already know they're blocking. But typically, yeah, when the actors show up, you're going to have to be like, hey, Kenny, start over there and then go to this fucking thing. But other than that, if you have great actors and you have done the pre-pro and you're on set and you've gotten to set, get out of the way. Just let them fucking act. Every director will tell you that. And it's every department. You let the wardrobe people be brilliant, hire the right people, and get out of the way.
That's all we can do.
It is. And you know what's weird, dude? The best books on directing, which I don't even always advise that people read books about things like directing, but that's what they say. in the first few pages of every decent book about directing, whether it's theater or film or TV or whatever, they all say like casting is 90% of the job. And casting is a word that applies to the actors. But truthfully, you cast everybody else in the fucking thing too. You cast every person in the crew. So if you cast everything right, in theory, it should, the machine should run.
Yeah, exactly. Did you go to school for directing? Like, what did you go to UNCSA for?
I went to school for directing in the drama school.
Okay, cool.
Nice. But I started in the design and production school as a lighting designer.
Okay.
And then I transferred.
The directing school is like hard to get into for actors. The acting school period is hard to get into.
Yeah, the drama school is a little narrow in their intake. Yeah, it was an interesting thing. And if I knew exactly where to point you, I would. I've talked about it on the podcast like a billion times. But it is not an easy or it's not something that people take to very well either. The movement across schools, the School of the Arts. That's another thing that's like weird about it. Say it again.
They were better. They were mad about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely, man. And it wasn't even like they were upset to lose me, but I think the thing that was frustrating for like design and production was I also didn't just get in smoothly either. I had like a deferment for a year, so I kind of had to be accepted twice and stuff. But they were like, the hit from design and production was like, well, we accepted you and we've been educating you and doing like, we've invested in you already and you're going to leave to go to this other department. But as always, you know, an institution's concern should be the education of the student. And if I was getting the education that I need, then who gives a shit? It shouldn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, when I hear that, and I did love my teacher at UNCSA, but when I hear that, it's just like, oh, we've invested so much time into you. Please don't leave. It's like, I invested 20 fucking grand into you. So I'm going to leave whenever I want to, please. And thank you very much.
Yeah, the investment idea is backwards. Last time I checked,
my tuition Pell Grant hit. So take that. I'm going to go for you.
No, you're totally right, man. It is 100% a dynamic that gets flipped on its head where it's, you're very much a paying customer, but because of the prestige or how hard it is to get in, they make you feel like you should be so lucky to give them $60,000. Like it is an absolutely bananas amount of like manipulation mentally that I don't think they set out maliciously to be like, ha 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 ha. Not only will we take their money, we'll make them feel like they owe it. Like it's just a result of how the thing is built. It's an accident, but it is hilarious and dumb and worth calling out in the moment of like, let's not get too up our own asses about what we're really doing here, which is we lack information and experience. We would like to pay for it and we would like you to give it to us. That's it.
Plus, the teachers are so far from the actual transaction. Like, I get why they feel that.
Correct.
Way. Like, their checks are going to come regardless. Like, they're not, it's not like you literally like bet on them 20 grand or something.
And it's the same thing on a set. The director doesn't cut your paycheck. You know, he's going to tell you what to do all day. But then when you're like, hey, I didn't get paid the right amount, he's going to be like, talk to the line producer. I don't know.
Do you direct now?
Yeah, but I direct television.
Nice. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a weird job. And I direct a weird.
It's like two space. I was like, we don't even need them.
Yeah. No, don't backpedal, man. You're not wrong because
we'll do that. But I was like, my candor.
You got to keep with it because you're coming from a place of realness. And truthfully, I mean, it's up to you how you want to navigate yourself politically. But for me personally, I say what I think, and I really try to say things that I can stand on no matter who's around. And if it's like, that's how you really feel, you just got to stick with it. And I agree with you in that. One of the things that drives me crazy about the television business and the film business in general is I love the delegation and I love the way that what you described here's the beautiful thing about the thing that you said that is so true, which is if everything is working well, the director doesn't have anything to fucking do. They're useless. They serve no purpose. But it is almost never working well.
The reason you have them. As a director, like, I completely believe. Yeah. I don't know how to work with that.
Boats fall apart.
Yeah,
exactly. And that is the nature of it. And I think the other thing is, one of the things that drives me crazy is that the film and television business is so bloated in so many different ways. You end up with a lot of people standing around when they don't need to. There's a lot that has to happen kind of automatically. But one of the things that I like about a good director, which really is a good assistant director, it's a good AD. That first AD, if they're paying attention and the director is also committed to this, that's the big caveat. The day works early, all day. You're ahead of the schedule, not behind it. And I think that those are the places where it's just also hard to study. Man, unless you just go to school and are on set the whole time making student films, which I don't know if that's even the best way to go to film school all the time, is to be on a student film set. But like, how else do you learn that shit? Which is really what your mom does. Like, you're a director, a good AD, a good project. Like, that's a project manager. That's like, wait. No, you have to set up your shit first. Then the lighting has to happen. That, come on, guys. Like, that's the same thing.
In that way as well. Like, I was like, she's not an art director, like, taste wise, but like, if she was to work in film in the art department, like, that's what she'd be. Like, it's just logistics.
Yeah.
We still grew up like really artsy growing up, I guess.
Is that part of your sensibility to like hustle? And are you punctual? Are you someone who gets frustrated if shit is late? Like, is that in your DNA at all? Or are you like lazy as a result of the fact that mom always had it on lock?
She was never super aggressive with us. If anyone made us get up early, Mark was always trying to leave 3 hours for the road trip. Like, he's one of those dads. I don't know. I'm trying to see if I'm going to answer the question. I would say I don't think a laziness is imposed by that. I think my laziness comes from procrastination. Probably.
Got it.
I think procrastinate at times, which I'm getting better at every day as I get older, for sure. But that's where probably my laziness comes from. It's like, oh, if I can just do something in 10 minutes, I might just, it's just never going to get done.
Right.
It's so easy.
Even though you could just knock it out now, it's like, let's do it right before it's going to be turned in.
Yeah, which was my attitude in school as well. I was definitely that kid who was like, I'm going to do my paper the night before. I'm getting that. Not worried. Let's do it.
How often did that work out for you?
It worked out.
See, you get that reinforced thought.
You do. Well, and UNCSA, you know, you do that as somebody who procrastinates as long as it works. So then UNCSA, you know, creates more, the film production process in general creates more stop points, more timelines, more deliverables, which, you know, kind of forces you into someone who, you know, is on time. I am on time now. I was on time for that. And it also makes
you were early to this.
Yeah. It was a little bit early.
I saw.
But it forces you, you know, into a process where you can't procrastinate everything. So it's not like I'm trying to design a film the night before we shoot. You know, we've been doing vision boards for 2 months. Like,
yeah.
Building up to this moment for forever. It's not like it's procrastinable as a freelancer. It depends on my relationship with the client. Like, I'm always going to deliver
right.
on. But I have a lot of people who are like, you know, it is done. And like, there's a general vibe of, you know, whether or not that's tomorrow, or maybe that's the end of the week, or maybe that's 2 weeks from now.
It's dictated by the person giving you the assignment, not necessarily the enthusiasm that you have for the project.
A lot of times, yeah. And then at work as a set designer, which is what I am right now, it's extremely easy to be diligent. Like, I'm at work to work. We're going to work. Like, that's the plan.
Is it easier for you to be productive on site rather than if you're doing something remotely?
Probably. I mean, only in the sense that, like, that there's not much else to do on site, maybe. But when I do work remotely, it's not hard to just grind it out. And I prefer to work remotely at most times.
Like, yeah, me too.
Now that I work with bigger projects, like, if I'm delivering you a 10-page draft at like ArcD or whatever it is, and I know it's going to take me 40 hours, like, yeah, it is easier not to procrastinate that because I know I have to do, you know, 5 hours. 5 hours.
Yeah. I direct my TV show remotely.
Oh, wow. That seems hard. Do they put you on like a hilarious like iPad that drives around?
I'm on a laptop.
And they just carry you? Do you have like a servant?
Yeah, I wish. Kind of. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, you figure out ways to cut costs, and that's what the pandemic, I think, did to a lot of different things, but it certainly did that to art and entertainment and the film industry in a way that I think is, some ways are really obvious and some are not. Like, one of the things that they found out really easily, and this is a great thing, this is one of the best, I think, things we figured out about our business in general. If an editor has a competent rig at their house, you don't have to rent an edit bay for them. Yeah. Well, and people have like known that for a long time and been like, well, we don't want the materials to be insecure, but you VPN that shit and everybody can do a full NDA, gonna air on cable television TV show from their living room if they have the right setup. And so you edit bays are fucking expensive, and setting them up and then renting them. And I think we figured out a lot of that can happen. Obviously also a lot of pre-production and general post-production supervision, like post-production supervision is something that is also, we've gotten office space for people that could be just doing that at their house, looking at Avid or whatever it is.
People prefer it that way. Like I definitely like working at home.
Yeah. Animators, I know, they're not going to work anymore. But it sucks because I also work, you know, I get to do that, but I also, man, I think I would make a better TV show if I was there in person.
Probably. I mean,
I really think so. It's hard for me to say for sure, but I really think so. And there are different things like the creative stuff where you're like, this doesn't help us to be a part.
As a draftsperson, it's definitely, I would rather be in office. Even though a lot of my work, you know, it's going to be a long drawing. But remotely, at least in the projects I've done remotely, you know, it's just drawing and then we'll see it if and when, you know, we see it done. But when you're working on a show, in person, you know, there's just a lot more of a collaborative process, even though it's not that super collaborative. But I can go down to construction and be like, okay, guys, how are you? Like, what's happening? Is it built right? Like, I can go fact check construction. Not that they would ever do a bad job, but I can go down there. I can be like, hey, what do you guys think of the plans? Are they okay? You need a detail. What do you need? I don't normally have like serve them in that manner, but I try to, you know, they're to be built with. So I try to, you can get so much knowledge just from collaborating with your construction crew and your art directing team. And you're only going to get that extra knowledge from being able to be on site and watch it get built. So that's one thing I do miss, is when I was doing my first couple shows, yeah, I could walk in and, you know, once a day or once every single week and see, you know, the sets that I did last week, you know, erect, which is always
good. Let's back up a little bit and talk about a unique situation that you were in that I want to cover with at least a few people. I've already talked to a few people about it, but you graduated in 2021. So you've got to do basically this almost the second half of your time you're doing during COVID and trying to figure out how the hell to go to school with that. I would imagine maybe the film school and the music school had it the easiest, only because obviously you can watch a film from your house, but it's a lot harder to make a film when everybody's in a different place. And then music, I'm like, get a good microphone. And it seems like you guys could pretty much do the fucking thing. But dance, I mean, Jesus. And just class. I'm not even thinking about the performances or even the films like that you're going to make. Just class alone, which is the bulk of your time, you know, even the projects that you're working on, it's like, it's maybe half and half. So I'm thinking about class. Film class seems still very easy to do.
Classes are easy to do. Yeah.
But then you have the project that you can't make, and which is everybody's dealing with that. But I'm thinking some of the other schools don't even, like, how do you do class for some of these people? Anyway, my question to you specifically is, what do you think were the effects of it as you look back, because now you're a few years out of the situation. Is there anything as you look back on how you had to cope with it based on what your teachers and the institutions were doing that you can be like a silver lining, or at least that was some version of another thing that we got out of it that no one else will ever get? Is there anything remotely positive, or did you just fuck all your shit up?
I mean, it wasn't that. It got busted up, but and a lot of people did get sick. Their families got sick and went through things. But just considering how it changed the rules at school. So for us, it meant the spring semester of 2020, prior to 2021, we got kicked out in like March or something. I was going to go to our Berlin trip. Did they have that when you were in school?
No.
Okay, yeah. So now we do an exchange program with Berlin. They send like 10 filmmakers here. We do a film with them, a small thesis. And then we go there for like a month or something. And That's over the summer. So I was going to go to Berlin. I fought tooth and nail. And then that got axed. Because obviously Every country closed its borders.
Yeah, that summer was done.
Yeah, that was definitely like a depressing summer for sure. I mean, I worked at Domino's. That was fine. Fall semester, we were mostly online. The rules that they, I don't know if you've heard this, the way they coped with it for actually making your thesis is, which in my opinion at the time, the thesis film is the bulk of your curriculum, or at least like the bulk of why to go there. Like that's what's going to add to your portfolio. That's what's going to be able to, you know, you're going to advertise it with it down the line, hopefully get jobs off of, you know, how inspiring it is or something like that. So they made all films had to be outside. You could be on a stage, but it had to be like open air, and you could only have a set number of people. So I remember part of our film was on stage, but it was like it had to be outside, it had to be on campus. That was the worst part, was everyone had to make their thesis somehow on campus, when normally we're just like throwing a couple grand at somebody that owns a house. And then, all right, whole films happened in a house, which is what a lot of people ran that kind of route. So we weren't able to do that. Other than that, it was pretty easy to cope. I mean, everybody had to get tested. Everybody had to wear N95s. Much like the industry, we had COVID compliance, quote unquote, like officers. So, you know, you check in, you get temperature checked, you get your mask, you get all your stuff that you need that day. And that's only the real hit it took, was just to strict locations and a little bit of production complications. Also, they cut it down to, used to be 2 3-day weekends for theses. Up until my junior year. And then my senior year, it was just 3-day weekends because they were trying to draw the curriculum into more about the skills you learn in class than just these big portfolio companies. It was like the agenda right when I left, apparently. So only having 1 weekend was fun. And you can do it. You think it's possible. But I definitely like having more, I guess. It was cool as a freshman having 2 weekends in a row.
Do you think you learned anything from that experience that you wouldn't have learned if you'd done the normal movie?
From having COVID for the movies?
Yep.
Not really. I mean, it's just something you have to work around. You know, I think I would have learned more, I think, if COVID wasn't there, because we would have been off campus and we would have had more opportunities to work with different resources. Like, it's harder to have a location owner that's a random person than to have a location owner be your campus. And being off site is going to run into production count. There's just more balls to manage. It makes it a bigger project. And you can move geographically. So I don't think I learned too much other than how to like stand 5 feet away. But I will say, you know, everyone handled it very professional. Like, we just took the industry's rules and just ran with them. And everyone still really wanted to make their thesis. So the passion was there. And we just did it, basically.
Well, I think it sounds like, and I don't want to give you anything that you didn't take, but I think that maybe there's something being taken for granted there about how easily you adapted to the industry standards and all of that stuff that was going on, even at that level. Because I think someone, first of all, as someone working in the industry at that time, there were industry standards, but there were also like different states. Like, I was simultaneously working on TV shows in California and running a comedy club in Texas, and we did not have the same fucking rules. They were completely different. And so I think how well the school really, I guess, deserves the credit, but the kids too, because they could have pushed back. You could have had a bunch of kids from like Texas and Florida who were like, my dad said this is a ba-ba-da. Like, it could have been a problem. And I think it's a good thing that it wasn't. And it's also like, I don't know, it pushes to show that like you care more about getting the thing done than whatever cultural thing might be going on, no matter how big that is.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. I think a lot of my keys have that issue as well. So we had,
but did you know that going in that you could that like the project would survive something so cataclysmic? Because it's not like it was a small thing. I'm not trying to make a big deal out of bigger deal out of COVID than it was, but it was not small for schools that had kids and were afraid of their kids and their customers, let's be honest, getting fucking sick and dying while they're trying to make a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was scary, I guess, until probably we went back for the fall and we knew we'd still be able to make films. Like, there was a period where we're like, how bad is it going to be? We don't know if we're going back. And in the sense of going back, we were still remote for all of our classes.
Right.
But for me, that still meant like living in a house near campus, because I'd have to be on campus, working on campus, on the films, be around, even if our classes are online. So, and to be able to just make filmmaking, you obviously have to be awesome. How was it socially? It was okay. I had a roommate. I got vaccinated. Pretty much everybody got vaccinated. And then different people were more and less intense about it, I guess. Like, if one person got COVID, then we're just not seeing that person for like 2 weeks. Like, sorry, guy. And anyone that was around them, we get tested. People generally had a pretty like forward thinking attitude. Or just like they were on top of the issue. They're like, oh, I was around somebody, they caught it, they didn't get symptoms. Like, this was last week, I want to get tested, figure it out. I'm going to do the right thing. Some people were more aggressive about social distancing than others, I guess. Like, there were some that were like, we're only meeting outside, 10 feet away, with masks on. That's the only way we meet. Me personally, I might have been like lackadaisical, but as long as you were outside with a mask, and then I knew you, and I knew you'd been vaccinated, and you've been tested recently, like, I was happy with like 3 or 4 friends coming over or something. Mostly because it's just a situation where you can trust that they're on top of it. You know, these are the only around. These are my 4 friends. You know, obviously if someone gets COVID, we won't see them. But I was able to at least, you know, have some people come over and still be around people that I was close with the pandemic. Yeah. But there's all parties. Parties got dumpstered. No parties. Yeah, no parties.
And that's kind of what I mean, dude. I think for so many people, we look back on like school of the arts for a bunch of different reasons. And obviously a huge part of it is the training and the projects and plays and the movies and stuff. But so much of it is the unique experience of being there socially. This is a very specific group of kids. It's a very small school, so everybody kind of knows a lot of the campus. You don't feel like you can really get lost in the mix. It's like one way or another, pretty much everyone kind of knows who you are. Even if you're not popular, it's like, oh yeah, I've seen him. I know the name, whatever. And you know, I mean, the parties on that campus, I've been to a bunch of different college campuses. They're kind of unlike anywhere else. And it's a different vibe. And I just wonder like how much of a loss that felt like while you were there, or did it just feel like, hey, we got to do what we got to do. I'm not even thinking about it. Or does it feel like, man, we're going to this dope ass place. The first years were so sick. And now it's like, this sucks.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of bad. I mean, it feels slightly immature to talk about now, but I definitely was like bummed because, first of all, respect to UNCSA for being around so many artists. You're never going to be around so many open-minded artists. It's impossible to do that unless, you know, you're just at a place like, you know, CalArts or UNCSA or something. Like, the density is just not there. You know, you're around so many people willing to be creative, willing to be open-minded, willing to collaborate at all times. And they all have things like you've been through, and they all have similar interests, and that's great. That's really hard to find as like a community culture. As far as like how much we lost, I did live off campus and I did throw some parties. I think a big part of our culture was that we did not frats. So when I was there, all the parties were divided by school. So if it was a D&P person's house, it'd be a D&P party, quote unquote. Or I was a film house, even though I strive not to be a film party house because film students don't know how to throw a party. Sorry, guys.
Who are the real party throwers on campus?
Ooh, the best ones?
If they're not the film students, who are they, dude?
The dancers probably played the best music and actually wanted to like dance and party the most. They were the best houses. And then I did throw some parties, and I think I'll get to that in a second. D&P was convenient my freshman year because they had... those students typically had things available that weren't easy to get. So that made things really convenient. Cash App, whatever. And then music people don't have parties. They're shut-ins.
Right.
There's like four of them having like one cocktail. And they're like, guys, it's pretty too spicy. And drama, there's just not enough of them. There are some drama parties. They were always exclusive. I've been to a couple. But like, the stuff not worth being exclusive. Don't worry about it. Yes. Not missing out on anything. They were cool. But yeah. So they
tell them that
junior year. And then, sorry, what did you say?
I said, tell them that. But they're not missing out on anything. Yeah. Good luck.
And then, yeah, parties got jumpstarted. And then the first one we were able to have like all year in 2021, that was like actually at back at scale, was our Beaux-Arts party. And that was really fun because when I was there, the hard thing was breaking out of your school mold when it comes to having a party. It's like, okay,
yeah,
you got a couple of dancers, but it's not like everybody. And that's simply not going to do. Like, that's just not going to be enough. But when we threw our Beaux-Arts party, it was right after COVID and no one else was able to throw really after parties, or they at least didn't try. And so that was amazing because everybody from every school was there. Like, 200 people were loaded up, you know, on a fucking back deck going in. Everybody's there. It was a great time. You know,
that's so awesome. That
cool. Definitely, even though it shut down a whole year, by the end of the year, we had like a really great opportunity, a party short squeeze, if you will. We were like, okay. And everyone was there. It's a good time.
Well, it seems yeah, like you pulled everything out as far as like trying to get the most out of your education, given the circumstances, like in both regards, like still everybody managed to show up and do both things, like make the shit and have a good time. Cause they're both equally important. Honestly, if you're going to pay to go to a school like that, the people who I would be like, yo, you're going to pay to come to this school and you're not going to the parties. I'm not saying you got to be at everything or whatever, but like the social shit is half of being at that place. Like not everywhere you go is like that. It would be like being from North Carolina and then going to NYU and then spending every night in your dorm, not in New York City. Like what?
Go out, meet the people. The people are so good.
You have to have a social experience.
That definitely was, you know, work hard, play hard. Grind like Kobe and then try to be Dionysus. Just be a good time.
There you go. Is that your quote?
Sure. I don't know if it sounds too cringy or not, but that's kind of the attitude, I guess.
I say dive into the cringe, man. These days, everyone's so afraid of the cringe. I say double it up, you know? Just go balls deep in the cringe, dude. Say it's stuff like I just did.
It has to roll off the tongue, you know? So we'll have to play with it. Well,
it's all good. Grant, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, man. This was super fun. We'll definitely we can do another episode in person for sure.
We have to kick off.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I live on the east side. What about you?
I live in, you mean the east side, like Glendale?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I live in Studio City.
Oh, hell yeah. That's where my wife's family lives. Over there all the time.
Holler.
All right, dude.
Now?
Say that?
Are you directing something now?
Yeah, I work on a TV show now. I've been working on the same show for like 3 years.
What is it about?
I will talk to you about that after we cut.
All right, my bad.
No, you're good. I should have told you my red flag stuff. I didn't. Me? That was narrow-minded of me.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope the students see it. They can get some wisdom, or I don't know. No, it's all going to be okay.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. It's I think it's clear from your outlook and your attitude overall that you're not one of the people who has a lot of trauma to sort out from their time at School of the Arts. You seem mostly like you had a good time and learned a lot of shit.
Yeah, I definitely know people that went through shit, but luckily
me too. And we've had them on the show and we'll continue to. I think the varied experiences that have happened there are what this show is about. It's not just one or the other, because truthfully, that institution is setting out to do something ambitious and untested, because there is no other school like it. That's why this podcast exists, because truthfully, most colleges in this country that offer the degrees that School of the Arts offers have very similar experiences depending on what you go there for. But to try to have five conservatories with different majors on one campus in the South in a small town, it's a unique thing to say you're going to try to do. And the diversity of people that they bring in to educate is also then like wildly ambitious and bizarre even at times. And so then you're also going to say the ambition of this place, which has been accomplished, is to create such prestige that most of the people who come to this school are like one of the best at what they do from wherever they're from. And you're going to put all those kids on one little island. Man, you're going to get some weird ass results from this experiment that you're trying. It's going to be wild. And it's all over the place. People have a fucking blast and they're like, it brought me back to life. People are like, I've never learned so much in my life. It's the reason I have a career. People are also like, it's the reason I went to therapy. People are like, it's also the reason I have a lawsuit. People are like, it's also the reason that I cry at night. People are like, it's the reason I get up in the morning. It is all of those things at the same time for all sorts of different people. And I think that is trying to find every flavor of that stew, I think, is what we're up to. So I appreciate you being a part of it. And honestly, it's nice to talk to people who are like, it was a blast. And you went there during fucking COVID and you still have this like smile on your face of like, yeah, we made the movie. We had the party. It was fucking fine. Like, well, I mean, pretty positive.
Yeah, there's always like bad things that happen. I definitely, you know, had some friends that I felt like protective over. I was like, got to make sure everything goes good. With our party, we were very heads up. I was like, we will not be that house. We will not be that. Like, if there's something goes wrong, because I don't know, I grew up in the South too with a single mom. So like, if men are acting out, we'd all fight. We never had fun.
Yep.
But I definitely throw forward that attitude. I was like, we're not doing shady stuff. If I catch somebody acting up, we're going to toss them. Like, it will not be tolerated. And then I will say, a lot of people, I can see how they feel. Don't let me ramble, but I can see how people feel beaten down by UNCSA. Like, when I got there, I had the attitude of like, I will do what it takes to get where I want. Like, I want to get an Art Director's Guild, win an Oscar for design as fast as possible, 14 hours to do a draft overnight. I stop at Waffle House. Like, I'm doing it. Like, I'm going to do it. I was about the, not abuse, but just like, I was always passionate about putting in the hours. And then even moving into film, people want to talk about having like shorter film days. I was never someone that wants that because I was like, I want to work as much as possible and make the greatest product. But I can see how that's just not for everybody. Like, how they're just like, weren't ready for the workload, or the work-life balance isn't what resonates with them. And know that it beats them off a little bit. Beats them off a little bit, if I can call it like that. Which is fine.
It is two-sided, right? We have talked about this on the show quite a bit. The pressure that gets put on the students, it is two-sided. Part of it is
I was always one to be about the pressure, but I completely felt for people.
But that's what I'm saying. It's two-sided in that part of it is on you because of the institution, and part of the pressure is on you because of you.
Yeah.
And when you are not game for the pressure, as you put it, if you're not up for that standard and willing to push yourself that hard, it does feel like abuse to have it asked of you.
Yeah.
But the truth is, I and you are both not qualified, in my opinion, to say whether or not it is. It is so complicated, and it is for a case by case basis. And if anything legal happens, for them to sort it out in a courtroom, because I don't feel like I'm going to sit on a podcast and be like, that was abuse and that was education. It's not, I don't know. I don't know. I can speak to people about their individual experiences and be very open to whatever they tell me is how they felt. You know?
Yeah, it definitely, I only know what I felt and how my colleagues felt. There's six designers around me for 3 years straight. I basically only know their experiences and a couple others, the best.
Right.
I feel like qualified to be like, this is how.
Do you feel like those other designers in that small group share your feelings? Or is it varied?
Well, no, it definitely does. Definitely varies for sure. I was definitely like, I mean, I just always had a job since 16, so the work was never scary for me. And I was not one of the best when I started. I was easily the worst drawer, one of two of the worst. Like, I could not draw for shit when I came into design. So we had to fix that. And then I was always wanting to put in the extra hours, which is ironic, because I was a procrastinator. So it's like, put in 4 extra hours to be waited till the last minute, but whatever. I had a colleague, Jordan. She was in the same boat as me. We were basically rivals. We were like, let's make the coolest thing, try as hard as we can. And then some people were more middle ground, like, okay, this is a lot of work, but sometimes it's also like how much work you turned it into. You know, some films really can just pick a film and have dinner in a fucking house and just set that up for $2,000 and just let the director do whatever he wants to do, just run it. And that's probably not going to be that bad of a workload for a designer. That's going to be easy work. They've been doing that since like second year. And then some people go over the designers. It's honestly a really even split. It's like two of us were on the far end, like, yes, we're going to do it. We will die in the paint. And two of them on the other side of the floor were like, this is too much. Like, these teachers have a bad attitude. But I don't feel that way about any of the teachers. I feel like they were done better. You know, they're asking weird things of me, or these expectations are wrong, or we shouldn't have to do this much work, or whatever. Or, you know, I start taking D&P classes and I can work more over there, start taking more there for a few long, say like the attitude, or just physical interest change. They're like, I don't want to spend
right. That
was my week after class, you know, doing film stuff, but I don't find it super inspirational. I want to learn some scenic stuff over there for whatever.
Were all of these other people that we're talking about, these six, were all of them straight out of high school into the program? Did any of them like take a gap year or go to another school?
Yes. One person went to a different school for a year with them. They went to Syracuse. And they came to UNC they like Syracuse program. And one of our designers was like 35. So he obviously had a lot.
Where did they fit into the like thinking it was a good vibe versus the middle ground?
Both of those people are in the middle ground.
Got it.
Actually, I mean, they were probably towards my side of like being about the work. But they just like were very on top of their things and just very unbothered. And like if they were bothered, like, yeah, we all run into a producer who's a bit good time.
Right.
They were never like mad at the school at how much work is there, or at least not to the degree that I would call them.
What an interesting little split you had.
It was everyone was willing to work and work for each other, though, which is
sure,
good.
Sure. And I'm not shit talking anybody. I want to make it clear. I know.
As a design year, we were just very collaborative. Like some of the design years aren't as like helpful to each other. But right. Most of the designers I worked for or worked for me at some point, if not all of them. It wasn't like some classrooms where it's like these three people on this side are friends and y'all friends are looking.
Yeah.
Threes, but we want like a split office at all.
Yeah, there were only four of us. We were really tight too. All right, dude. We'll save some of it for the next episode in person. I've got a new studio I'm going to be in starting this summer, so I'm happy to welcome you to that. You come over, we'll throw back a few and do an in person if that sounds good.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Thanks, Grant.
Yeah.